ananyaschintayanto mam ye jana paryubhashate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vaham yaham. But those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies. Indeed, they make the devotee perfect in self-realization. Then his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called yoga. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Kshema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga. And when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable condition of life. But those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. This verse from the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita reveals the nature of a true devotee of the Lord. Such a devotee is 100% dependent on the mercy of the Lord, with complete faith that Krishna will always protect his devotee. It explains here, those who worship Krishna with devotion, ananyas chintayanto mam, means to such a person who has no other shelter than Krishna, who has no other object of meditation than Krishna. In this world, we are conditioned to taking shelter of so many people, so many things. When we're sick, we want to take shelter of medicine. When there's some danger, we want to take shelter of the military or the police. When we're in debt, we want to take shelter of some bank. In this way, throughout our life, our mind is diverted away from Krishna. But a devotee understands with complete faith that Krishna is our only shelter. And ultimately it is Krishna who provides from all resources of this material existence. Janmadyasha yata. He is the source of everything. Krishna explains that people of less intelligence, they take shelter of demigods, aspiring to achieve material benefits from them. But they do not know that whatever the demigods have to give you is coming from me. So intelligence simply means to take shelter of me. Devarshi buddhapta niranam pitaram nakinkari nayam ranicharajan sarvatmana ya sharanam sharanyam gathomukandhan parantitya karatam. That when one takes shelter of Krishna, surrenders to Mukunda, he's no longer responsible or obliged to anyone or anything else in this world. Neither one's forefathers, the kings, the demigods, no one, even the great rishis. Because Krishna is the source of everything. Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu explains that this is one of the characteristics of surrender, that one knows no other shelter than Krishna. One is completely dependent on Krishna. And for such a person who is aspiring this type of faith, Krishna explains, I preserve what he has and I carry what he lacks. Konteya pratibhani, konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. My devotee never perishes, you declare it, Arjuna. So many wonderful ways Krishna showed the evidence of this fact to help us to establish faith. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Bhishma Dev, because of his natural affection for the Pandavas, although he was fighting so ferociously that no one could defeat him, whenever he was confronted with the Pandavas, because of his love for them, he could not shoot his arrows with any determination or strength. Because he knew that they were great devotees of Krishna. And he was also a great devotee of Krishna. And he loved them. So Duryodhana, he was actually a master at everything. He was actually a man of unbelievable good characteristics. He only had one problem. He was envious of the Pandavas, who were Krishna's devotees. And even if one is an ocean of good qualities, if one offends Vaishnava devotees, then everything is ruined. So Duryodhana, he knew how to manipulate words to pierce anyone's heart. So one evening after the battle, he told Bhishma that you are a failure as a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya, when he takes side in an army, he cannot allow any sentiment or emotions to come between him and his fighting. And because of your soft heart to these five brothers, you are not fighting with all of your strength. Therefore, you are a disgrace to the Kshatriya race. He was saying things like this. And Bhishma became very much excited. He said, tomorrow I will kill the five Pandavas. And I have these five arrows. And with these five arrows, they will be slain. So Duryodhana, to safekeep the arrows, he said, please, let me keep these five arrows overnight. He said, yes. Krishna, who's in everyone's heart, knows everything. He understood that those five arrows were there. So he told the Pandavas. And they devised a plan. At night, they went to Duryodhana's tent. And even amongst enemies, when someone comes to your home, you must treat them with respect. And even though Duryodhana was such a demoniac person in many ways, he understood that for a grihastha to not be hospitable to a guest who comes to your home, your whole wealth and everything will be ruined, be cursed. So Duryodhana said to Arjuna, "Oh, you have come to my home. Whatever I have, I will give you." Arjuna said, "Ah, give me those 5 arrows. So Duryodhana had to give the 5 arrows. And the next morning when he told Bhishma, Bhishma said, "Where are those arrows?" He said, Krishna and Arjuna came and this is what happened." Ah, Bhishma, he decided he was going to use this as an excuse to glorify Krishna in a wonderful way. That Krishna has made me break my promise. I am going to make him break his promise. Because at the beginning of the, just before the battle, Krishna decided that to one side I will give my army, and to the other side I will be. But I will not fight, and I will not lift a weapon. I will only be a charioteer. So Duryodhana and Arjuna came before him, and Krishna gave the choice. And Duryodhana, who had material ways of thinking, who was judging things by material considerations, sometimes devotees fall into this trap. They judge things by how they appear with the eyes. Premanjana turita bhakti vilochanena. But a devotee, he sees everything on the basis of his faith in God. Chakshusha shastra. He sees everything through the eyes of the scriptures. So Duryodhana was thinking, if Krishna fights, then nothing could defeat him. But if he doesn't fight, he's useless. So therefore, I will take his armies. One Akshohini division. So many elephants, so many chariots, so many foot soldiers, so many weapons. Of the Yadus, very powerful. Arjuna was very happy. You can have the armies. I have Krishna. Wherever there is Krishna, there cannot be defeat. Krishna is always victorious. And whoever side Krishna is on is guaranteed to be victorious. In the end, not necessarily at the beginning, Krishna likes to put his devotees in distressful conditions just so that the devotee completely takes shelter of him as the only source of dependent shelter. And Krishna promised on the battlefield of Gita, that Arjuna, you declare it, that my devotee will never perish. He values the word of his devotees more than his own word. So Bhishma, out of love for Krishna, to want to glorify how Krishna loves his devotees, he confronted Arjuna on the battlefield. And they began to fight. And Bhishma completely overpowered Arjuna. So he was helplessly laying on the ground. And Bhishma took his arrows and was about to kill him. At that time, Krishna, seeing his beloved devotee Arjuna about to be slain, he picked up the wheel of a wagon and started running at his top speed. Well, who knows what God's top speed, but he ran very fast at Bhishma. And when Bhishma saw him, he saw death personified. Krishna's eyes were red like hot coals. There was beautiful, beautiful dust from the raised hooves of the horses covering his hair and his body. His hair was disarrayed. As he was running toward Krishna, Bhishma, as he was running toward Bhishma, he began to shoot him with arrows. And as he was shooting Krishna with arrows, and they were piercing Lord Krishna's body. He was actually offering these arrows in love, because he was a Kshatriya. Srila Prabhupada explains from the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that just as on Pushyabhishek, that wonderful festival we had, our devotees were showering Radha Gopinath with very soft, delicate flower petals. And why do we do like this? Because it's very pleasing to the Lord to be showered with flower petals. Do you remember a few years ago during the Pune Yatra when we were doing Harinam Sankirtan in the street? And one very dear devotee, Mr. Rati, he arranged that wherever we went, people on the roofs, the local people, were showering the devotees with flower petals. And the devotees were in such ecstatic joy, because it's so pleasing to be showered by flower petals by devoted religious people. So Krishna, he was feeling the arrows of Bhishma piercing his body, the same way he feels the flower petals of another devotee upon himself. Why? Because Krishna is completely transcendental. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. His body is pure and spiritual. Nothing material can touch Krishna's body. No arrows, no flowers can touch Krishna's transcendental body. But he accepts the love and devotion in which it is offered. Bhishma was shooting his arrows with pure love, and Krishna was feeling it as very, very soft and pleasurable. Chakravarti Thakur also explains the example that when someone who loves you in the mood of conjugal love bites the beloved, it feels very nice. Now, of course, if someone else bites you, it's a great offense, it hurts. But if your lover does, it feels very nice. Prabhupada explains it like this. So Krishna was accepting Bhishma's arrows with love, but his mood was to appear very angry. And with his chariot wheel, he was about on the verge of killing Bhishma when Bhishma put down his arrows and with folded palms surrendered to Lord Krishna. And Krishna will always give his mercy to one who surrenders. In doing this, he forced Krishna to break his own promise to show that under all circumstances, he will protect his devotees. There's another beautiful story about a Brahmin. He was very poor, and he was a very great devotee. He was very learned. He was constantly reading the scriptures, especially Bhagavad Gita, and always chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. He would go out every day to beg for food. Go out usually for about an hour, and whatever little he collected, he would bring back and share with his wife. And his wife is just as devoted and religious as him. And they were so content with whatever was provided. He was always thinking of Krishna. He was reading Bhagavad Gita, and he came upon this verse that we are discussing today. ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryubhashate tesham nityab yuktanam yogakshemam vaham yaham. But those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack, preserve what they have. He was thinking that I have taken exclusive shelter of Krishna. He's depending on Krishna. And here Krishna says that he carries what we lack and preserve what we have. And that for me, look at this house. There's absolutely nothing in this house. There's not even a pot to hold water. There's not even a single grain of rice. Even rats and the rats don't come around. Because there's nothing. We're depending on Krishna, not this microphone system. Disconnection. If I was Bhishma, I would shoot arrows at him. Since I'm not a Mahajana, I should give him flowers. Where was I? Not even mice. If Krishna carries what we lack and preserves what we have, then why is it that I'm in such complete poverty? When all I do is think of Krishna and chant his names and read his words, this is not possible. I don't believe this. Why Krishna said this? This verse is bogus. I don't even believe that Krishna wrote this verse. Somebody else must have put it in. He was thinking, and yoga kshemam vaham yaham, he says he personally carries and preserves. Maybe Krishna will give through the king, or will he give through some rich householder, or will he give through material nature, but he doesn't come and personally arrange for his devotees. This is nonsense. So he took his red pen and he crossed out this verse, yoga kshemam vaham yaham. Then he said to his wife, I'm going to go out begging. So he went out. And that day, nobody gave him anything. He was thinking, Krishna, this verse is definitely bogus. He's not giving me anything today. He'd go to one house. Our father died, so we cannot give any charity for 1-2 weeks. Whatever. All these excuses. Nobody. He was out for hours and hours and hours, and nobody gave any charity. Meanwhile, his wife, she only had one piece of cloth. And her husband lost his cloth. So before he went out to beg, he asked his wife to rip half of her cloth for him to wear. At that time, while she was at home, sitting hungry, a beautiful young boy who had a complexion like a dark monsoon rain cloud and had beautiful lotus-like eyes and who had a wonderful golden yellow dress . He was carrying a wooden pole over his shoulder. And on one side of the pole, there were all these pots filled with wheat and rice and ghee and sugar and butter. And on the other side of the pole, there was fruits and vegetables and all sorts of spices. And it was very heavy. And he was a very small, delicate young boy. And because he was carrying this heavy load, he was perspiring, and all of his beautiful clothes were soaked with perspiration. And he knocked on the door. And the Brahmin's wife, she said, "Who's there?" Said, "I am the disciple of your husband, and he has sent me here." But she couldn't open the door because she had no clothes. So this little boy took off his own chador and put it in. And she put it on, and then she let him in, and she saw that this boy, he was breathing very hard, and he was perspiring. She said, "What do you mean, disciple of my husband? My husband is not a guru. He has no disciples." He said, no, you are my guru mata. You are like my mother because you are the wife of my gurudev." Said, "I was just with Guru Maharaj, and he put this big load on my shoulder. He personally put it all on my shoulder, and he told me to carry it home and give it to you, and it's so heavy. And I asked him, can I just get a little water before I take this load? And he said, no water, you carry it home." And the wife, she was thinking, "My husband, what a bogus person. He acts like such a gentle, compassionate Brahmin, but he's cruel. Look at this boy, he's perspiring. He's overloaded with a load you wouldn't even put on the back of an ass. And he wouldn't even give him any water. How cruel." And then the child said, "You know what else he did?" Brahmin's wife said, "What?" He said, "He took my back and started scratching it. And then he turned around and there were big red marks all over his back." And she said, "Oh, my husband did this to you. What a cruel, offensive rascal." And she started weeping, crying, to see the anguish of this little child. And she took him on her lap and she began to care for his scratches on his back with all sorts of nice water and herbal oils. And she started weeping on him, thinking how much he has been forced to carry this terrible burden. She said, "You must be hungry." And the child said, "Yes, your husband wouldn't even let me eat." So she started taking the preparations and brought them in the kitchen and started to cook. At that time, the Brahmin came home. He didn't get anything all day. By this time, it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and he was so completely disappointed that they would fast today. So he knocked on the door. She said, "Who is it?" "It's me." "Oh, you." So she let him in. She started chastising him. You know what wives can be like when they chastise their husbands. I don't know, but I have heard. So she was, "You bogus, cruel person. You call yourself a Brahmin." I said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "What you did to your disciple." I said, "I don't have any disciples." "You put that big heavy load on him." "What heavy load? And where'd you get all this food you're cooking?" She said, "From your disciple. He brought it. All this boga, all these vegetables and fruits and ghee and butter and spices and grains. And you forced him to carry it. And then you scratched his back. How cruel." He said, "I don't know what you're talking about. Who is this person?" She said, "He's in the next room. Show me who he is." So they went, and the boy was gone. "Maybe he's so afraid of you, he ran." So he was very much confused. And when a devotee becomes bewildered,
He always takes shelter of the Shastra. Just like Arjuna, when Arjuna was confused and bewildered, he took shelter of Krishna's words. So this Brahman, he decided to also take shelter of Krishna's words. So he picked up his Bhagavad Gita, and when he picked it up, it was on the page that he was reading just before he went out to beg. And he looked at this verse. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupashate tesham nityabhi uktanam yogakshemam bahamyam. And what he noticed is that he crossed out this verse with his red pen, but those cross marks were erased. The verse was visible as it was. And he began to weep. He began to cry. He understood that these words are none different than Krishna. And when he scratched out the words, he actually scratched the body of Krishna. And when Krishna promises that he will personally carry what his devotee has and preserve what he has and carry what he lacks, Krishna actually came to show that he will do it personally. So that devotee, that Brahman, developed complete faith that yes, Krishna personally always is with his devotee to protect him. You see, the path of bhakti is to understand Krishna as a person. Parasya shaktira vivadaiva shruyate, that the Supreme Absolute Truth has many various energies. Principally, there are three energies: Daivi Shakti, Maya Shakti, and Jiva Shakti. The material energy, the spiritual energy, and the marginal energy, Tathasta Shakti, the spirit soul. And within these three categories, there are unlimited subdivisions of Krishna's various energies. But Krishna is the energetic source. He is Shaktiman. He is the source of all energies. And that source of all energies is declared in the Shastra, and especially most clearly explained in Srimad Bhagavatam as Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahatmanas tumam bharata daivim prakriti mashyacha bhajantyananya manasho gyatva bhutadim avyayam. Who is a Mahatma? A Mahatma is one who is completely taking shelter of the divine energy of the Lord, and who is always engaging in the loving devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, Krishna is the all-providing Brahman, but he is the source. His beautiful form of Shamsundar is always there to protect personally, to guide and to direct one who is taking shelter of him. And this is what the great acharyas and the Lord himself, especially in his form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they have come to give us this message, that we must have shraddha, we must have faith that Krishna will personally arrange whatever is required for the spiritual progress of his devotee. And we approach Krishna personally. When we chant his holy name, the impersonalists, their conception of Nam Sankirtan is to chant a name which is a spiritual sound vibration which releases us or liberates us from the bondage of this material world. But a devotee has a much deeper insight than this. When a devotee chants the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare.
He's aware that Krishna is the all-beautiful, all-merciful, all-glorious personality. And all those qualities of Krishna are personally present within his name. And by attentively and regularly chanting Harinam, it awakens our dormant, ecstatic love for Krishna. And in the purified state, we can enter into the spiritual abode and engage in personal loving reciprocation with Krishna and his devotees eternally. Just as Krishna is a personality, his devotees are personalities. And what is a greater way of pleasing Krishna than pleasing those that he loves, his devotees? In Pandharapur, there's a beautiful temple. And you all know the history of that temple. There was a devotee of the name Pundarik. Yes. And he was going to a holy place to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But his mother and father, they were actually great devotees of the Lord. And they were very old. And they needed so much care and attention. And he left them to go to worship the Lord in a holy place. But somehow or other, some celestial beings appeared before him in a wonderful way and began to speak to one another of how important it was to be the servant of the servant. So he was thinking that, how will the Lord be pleased with me going to this holy place if I'm neglecting his devotees? So he returned home with so much conviction. He just very, very carefully, with his body, mind, words, and soul, he just started taking care of his mother and father, who were wonderful devotees. And he was serving these devotees so nicely by just making them very comfortable and doing everything they could possibly need. Krishna was so pleased with this that he wanted to come and give his darshan to his devotee. Krishna gives his darshan to those who really, truly care for the Vaishnavas. So he came and he called Pundarik, and Pundarik, he ran little way into the forest. There he saw Krishna. He said, Krishna, I want to worship you, but I'm in the middle of serving these devotees, my mother and father, they need my help. So you please, here is a brick. You stand on this brick and you wait, and I will come back when I complete my seva. So he went back and he started serving and serving and serving. And Krishna was waiting hour after hour after hour. He put his hands like this as he was waiting. And Pundarik never came back. Meanwhile, he was there for so long that Rukmini in Dwarka, she was thinking, where is my husband? He's left me. He's left me to serve, to give his darshan to his devotee. So she came to Pandharapur and she saw her Lord standing waiting. And she stood a little distance away waiting. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is even willing to keep the Goddess of Fortune waiting, to wait for those who are serving his devotees. And therefore he became known as Vitala, one who is standing on the brick. And what does that brick represent? That brick represents the enthusiasm of his devotee to serve the Vaishnavas. Krishna's lotus feet will always be present upon that heart that is anxious to serve the Vaishnavas. Sri Vitala Dev Ki. Rivo. Krishna will always personally be wherever we are sincerely seeking shelter of his lotus feet and the service of his devotees. And this faith can be awakened by hearing the beautiful stories of the Lord as revealed in the scriptures and by chanting his holy names. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadeksantite jnanam gyaninastvata darshana. When we associate with the Lord's devotees, we must understand that there are three qualities which are most essential to receive the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas. The first is we must be submissive. The second is we must make relevant inquiries. And the third is we must be willing to carry out the order by performing seva. If we approach our Guru and we approach sincere Vaishnavas with these three qualities, then the result is that by their blessings, Shraddha, or faith, will grow in our heart. By learning to associate with devotees properly, faith will grow in our heart. And that faith is the most powerful force in all of creation. Because in that faith, Krishna will personally be there to guide us, to protect us. And it is with this faith that we aspire to chant Krishna's holy names. That is why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so much stressed Sankirtan, chanting the holy names in the association of devotees. In that association, faith is awakened. And when we chant the holy name with faith, there is no more powerful means of attracting Krishna, attracting Krishna's personal presence and mercy in our life. So in this way, let us be grateful for the good fortune that we have to be here together, to hear the wonderful pastimes and teachings of the Lord, and to chant his holy names. Hare Krishna.
Hare Ram. Hare Ram. Ram Ram. Hare.
Thank you very much.